All right. Good morning, everybody. We're back, and thanks for bearing through that intro music this morning. Thought it'd be fun, and I think some of you enjoyed it secretly. You don't have to admit it. It's okay. You can go back and listen to it again later. but I want to welcome everybody to Bitcoin Veteran Spaces number 235. I'm your host, Bob Van Kirk, this morning, and today is Monday, August 4th, 2025. If you're just waking up like Infra out on the West Coast, not to dox him, but we are at Bitcoin block height number 908,572 with the Bitcoin price sitting just below $115,000, which means you can still pick up 870 sats for each US dollar. Couple of announcements. We do have Infra today. He was hanging out with Marty Bent last Friday, so happy to have him this morning. We'll get a little bit of an economic update, hopefully, from him. And let's see, just a reminder, Thursday, we're going to have Rob Warren from Bitcoin Park. He is going to talk about their Imagine If Summit that's happening in Nashville, Tennessee, this September 19th and 20th. So that'll be a lot of fun. Let's see. We have BFP up here. Maybe we get some Matrix birds today. Maybe not. But before we jump into some macro topics and infronomics, let's say hi to BFP. How are you doing this morning, sir?
I'm doing well. How's it going, Bob?
It was a great weekend. We got a nice little dip on Bitcoin and had some fun with the fam up at the orange pill retreat, as we call it, and it was a good time. So Robert, good morning, how was your weekend?
Hey, good morning, guys. Yeah, it was relaxing.
Yeah, it's funny, the peace that sweeps over you on a nice Bitcoin dip, but glad to hear you guys are doing well. And we do have a bunch of topics we can dive into, but I think first, Infra, what's been on your mind with all the things that we saw in the market last week? Tariffs kind of popping up on August 1st. Obviously, we had Jerome Powell come out for the Fed and talk on Wednesday. Markets have been reacting. I think we got some other news that some of these sovereigns, maybe it was China, is slowing gold and other precious metals outflows. So yeah, just curious, like all those things that are going on, like what's your take on what's going on?
Yeah, well, there's a lot. I would say, also, Kugler resigned, from the Fed. So this opens up kind of a spot for the shadow Fed, get someone on the inside that Trump can kind of indicate to everyone will be the next Fed chair. Because I mean, it's kind of like a president. I'm not a political expert, but I would imagine it's kind of like politics. You know, the vice president is kind of assumed to be the next in running for president. So I would imagine it's the same kind of thing where whoever replaces her on the Fed board, the Board of Governors, will kind of be the assumed nominee for next Fed chair. So, I would say that's probably significant. I wasn't really expecting, her to resign or, any of the existing governors to resign. So that was interesting, caught my eye. I would also say, you know, of course, Trump firing the, BLS commissioner was pretty notable. This is, very, emerging market like stuff. But, you know, he didn't like the data. The ironic thing is that, we saw a massive move down in rates. So you would think he would be pleased, He got what he wanted. It just took a little bit of weak data. But no, he was, you know, quite upset, fired the BLS commissioner. We know, by the way, that BLS, data has been bad going back, many years. I mean, 5 years probably. Obviously COVID was, you know, a huge, disruption in terms of eco data. And there was a ton of noise and, you know, statistical issues and structural changes to the economy. Also changes to the way the survey data was collected, that a number of people have pointed to. So yeah, there were a lot of, issues already with the data. I would not say that it was manipulated for political or partisan reasons. I would just say the data has been bad, low quality data for a long time, and had kind of nothing to do with politics or Trump. I mean, it was bad under Biden. We had a 12 sigma, likelihood that I think it was like 30 something straight BLS reports were revised down. So it is statistically almost impossible for that to occur. So the data has been bad for a long time. But you know, firing the BLS commissioner, this is a very emerging market like thing to do. And goes to kind of what we talked about the last time I was here, which is, you know, whether it's monetary policy with the Fed, whether it's, you know, the statistics and eco data being reliable, Bitcoin, you know what you're getting. The protocol is open source. It's, you know, the blockchain is validated, right? Very frequently. So we know this, there's a security audit being done. And yeah, like, you know what the inflation rate's going to be. You know, the monetary policy, it's a bearer asset. You can take it anywhere in the world. It just, I don't know, maybe I'm weird, but it emerges to me, those properties emerge to me in a situation like this and just, you know, shine above, you know, heads and shoulders above the, something like equities, certainly something like bonds. I really don't know who would want to own, U.S. government bonds here, given all the things that are going on, not only with the Fed, but also the BLS commissioner, right? The eco data. You just kind of go down the list and it's like, you know, the reliability, the security of Bitcoin, the predictability of Bitcoin, something like that just emerges. And it's like, you know, who would want to own a centralized government bond? And not only centralized, but, you know, we know the fiscal health of the U.S. So yeah, like I think that over the next year, over the next 2 years is kind of a long, medium to long-term story. It's not going to be an overnight thing. We're not going to get that Omega candle to a gazillion dollars like some people talk about. That's not my view. But I do think around the margins that things like Bitcoin, and I'm bullish gold too, generally medium to long-term. I think that, you know, bear assets that have scarcity and can protect you during a fiscal dominance regime, where they are running negative real rates to inflate the debt away, as Trump himself has talked that is his intention. I mean, he wants to cut the federal funds rate by an absurd amount, and then just finance the entire government on an overnight basis, basically, with negative real rates, right? So if you buy that treasury bill, you're going to be a guaranteed loss in inflation adjusted terms. That's what a negative real rate is. And I don't see how that's possibly good for the dollar, by the way. So yeah, you know, something like gold or Bitcoin that has scarcity. I mean, we know Bitcoin is more scarce, right? Which is one of the reasons that I think it'll perform better than gold. It has more scarcity. It's also a newer asset, smaller market cap, right? Smaller size means kind of, you know, bigger moves, more volatility. That being said, volatility is, you know, tame relative to, you know, say 5 years ago. Like, yeah, we got a dip right over the past couple of days, but like Bitcoin appears to have changed after the ETFs. It's just moving much more predictably. It's moving much more, like a mature asset. Now it's still, you know, a long ways from being completely mature, but, you know, the days of like 30%, daily candle, are gone. I mean, I remember watching, you know, that sort of thing in the very, very early days. And it was like, it was nerve wracking, you know, and as you have a decrease in the volatility of Bitcoin, as, again, all the kind of like properties of Bitcoin become, I think, recognized much more by the world, by corporations, by individuals, by even sovereigns. I think that you see, more and more capital around the margins kind of flow into Bitcoin. The bigger it gets, the more capital flows into it, the lower the volatility, in my opinion. And you have the development of all these kind of, complexes on top of Bitcoin. So I'm very bullish for Bitcoin for the next, as long as your time horizon is longer than a couple months. I think that Bitcoin is one of the best assets for the next couple years. For example, I was looking at Turkey yesterday for a video, for kind of a comparison. A lot of people are saying, the U.S. is emerging market-like. And it's like, number one, you just realize that it's been that way for at least a year and a half or 2 years. Number two, okay, well then let's look at an emerging market. If you look at an emerging market like Turkey, yeah, the stock market in Turkish lira just goes straight up. It's just vertical. But once you denominate it in, say, dollars, it's a much different story. During the kind of 85% inflation that at the peak in 2022, it barely broke to a new all-time high in real terms, in dollar terms, right? Adjusting for that loss of that failure of the currency. So yeah, I still go down the list. Don't want to own bonds. Don't want to own equities. Especially at these kind of valuations that we're seeing, with equities. So yeah, I understand people watch the hourly chart on Bitcoin and get all freaked out sometimes when it pulls back. But like, if you look at the 3 month chart, just if you're going to look at the Bitcoin price, only look at it on the 3 month chart. Or if you want to get really, spicy, you can maybe put on the monthly chart. The thing is just up and to the right. So yeah, I'm not worried about the dip over the past couple of days. I think that if anything, the events kind of transpiring in the macro world just point even more bullish, to Bitcoin. So, that's kind of how I see things.
Yeah, it's a really good analysis. We do have a hand, but before we go to Wade, and good morning, Wade and others who have joined us on the stage, wanted to mention, we talked last week, late in the week, that after the Fed minutes, the dollar started strengthening and went over 100 on Dixie and now has pretty much given all that back and retraced back down under 99. So, and you're also seeing Bitcoin run up precipitously. So I think the interesting thing is, you had a lot of really good nuggets there, but one of the interesting things to me is, just seeing, how Bitcoin is playing with all of these, all the things that you mentioned, right? Fed chair, or not Fed chair, but Fed stepping down, potentially getting a new, the shadow Fed chair and, then seeing what these countries are doing and just all these things that impact markets. Bitcoin has been overall pretty resilient. I mean, I think it only retraced about 4 or 5% overall, and here we are seeing it come back. So, Wade, thanks for coming up on stage. Do see your hand, and curious to hear what you have to say this morning.
Good morning, guys. Good morning, Robert. Me and my team are looking at some of the supply chain implications of some of the recent tariff moves and whatnot. And it kind of seems like the administration is working both the gas and the brakes at the exact same time. I'm not sure how you get a trade deal done with India and then you put a subsequent embargo out there, which apparently appears to impact the import of iPhones into the country due to the reprocessing of Russian oil in Indian petroleum refining capacity and whatnot, and the redistribution of those flows. Rob, I was just wondering if you could just for the group kind of break down what your thought or thesis is regarding, the iPhones, the uranium imports from Russia, the petroleum issues, and then the gas and the brake narrative with both the tariffs and the trade deals.
Yeah, I think, I'm not sure as much on the trade side. It's not really, area that I feel competent in, to make a comment on that. But I would say that on, more the economic side, they are, I would agree with the kind of gas and brake, analogy at the same time. Something like a tariff, for example, is really a tax. It's not, despite what the mainstream media will tell you, a 100% of it going to the consumer. That is not how it works. The tariff is only applied to the import cost of the good. So an iPhone, for example, you mentioned, this is, you know, called $1,000. Well, it's not a 10% tariff on $1,000. It's a 10% tariff on $500, because the average, margin for goods from China is about between 45 and 50%. So the tariff only applies to that import cost. So instead of a $100 tariff, we're already talking about much lower amount. We're talking about $50 in actuality. Well, and then you have to realize that history tells us that 100% of that $50 does not get passed to the consumer. That's just not how it works. About a third gets eaten by the supplier. A third gets eaten by the U.S. firm that is importing it. And then a third gets eaten by the final U.S. consumer. So out of $50, if you, you know, take a third of that, that is really what the consumer will pay. Well, a tariff like that is basically a consumption tax when you look at it, especially if you don't see an offsetting move in the currency, which, right, the dollar's been extremely weak relative to other currencies for the past, you know, 9 months or so. So you're not taxing foreign countries, which is what happens when your currency will appreciate. It can offset the tariff, actually, which is what we saw in the first term. It's not doing that. The dollar is not doing that. So, you know, at the heart of it, a tariff is a consumption tax. And it's not to say whether that's good or bad. I personally think that, some degree of tariffs is, you know, would be good. But it's a consumption tax. So you are decreasing aggregate demand, which, you know, in an economy that's driven mainly by consumer spending, we know the K-shaped economy, we know kind of the lower three quarters are tapped out. You know, it's gonna have a negative impact on kind of nominal growth. But then on the other hand, you have him proposing, you know, not negative real rates and kind of this run it hot sort of regime domestically when it comes to monetary and fiscal policy. We know the fiscal deficit is running at about 7% of GDP, which is just insane. So yeah, you know, it's a strange world to try to forecast, because yeah, you have these sorts of push pull where it's like, well, where's the middle, right? Trying to find out where the middle is between the gas and the brake, like where we're going to actually settle out, is difficult to say. And I would also say that, like, for assets, you know, if their goal is to decrease the trade deficit, you know, you have to take into account that the other way of saying that the Trump admin's trying to reduce the trade deficit, the other way to say that is they are trying to reduce the capital account surplus. And so this is, you know, again, a headwind for dollar denominated assets. So when you're trying to forecast, you know, where does the stock market go? What are bonds doing? What is kind of real estate and dollar denominated assets? What are they going to do in this push pull environment? You know, that's another factor. So there's a lot of uncertainty. There's a lot of volatility. I'm really kind of like uncertain how it all shakes out. I do think they want to reduce reliance on the rest of the world. The rare earths were really a big deal. You could tell, when it comes to China. And with India, it's like, you know, I started to notice all of a sudden they're talking about, Trump and key officials are talking about kind of like some of the H-1B dynamics. So yeah, like it's really hard to, you know, get a pulse on like where they really stand. I mean, I would support, efforts, you know, if they are going to try to deal with some of the remittance issues, which are driving, to some degree, you know, our current account deficit, not contributing in a meaningful way, in a positive direction for the U.S. economy. That's great. If they're going to try to reduce this kind of, you know, bizarre behavior by multinationals to fire Americans just to hire cheap foreign labor via H-1Bs, I would support that. But like trying to put your finger on like how much they really care about reliance on, you know, a foreign country for XYZ, it's really hard to say, because it's just, their policy is just like all over the place. So it's really kind of hard to get a feel for how much they really care about any of these issues.
As we reshore, can we really afford to have large tariff impact on Chinese rare earths or Russian uranium? Or is that just going to be like a windfall for the Canadians? But then again, we still have trade deals up in the air with the Canadians as well. So it's really hard for us to get like an idea where we're headed with the supply chain here for me and my guys.
Yeah. And I mean, look, tariffs alone are not, we're never going to reindustrialize. They were never going to reshore. That's just the problem is the dollar is so overvalued, right? The degree of overvaluation with the currency is so pronounced that, you know, a 20% tariff is not going to do much when the dollar is, say, 60% overvalued. No one really, has a firm level on the Dixie that, is the fair value. I mean, there's different ways of calculating it, like purchasing power parity. But yeah, you know, we're talking a significantly overvalued dollar. So until they, you know, until that is addressed, you're not going to see, you're trying to incentivize domestic production of, say, rare earths, or, you know, core commodities and inputs, for critical industries. You're trying to do that. But if the dollar is, you know, still, overvalued to a degree that is not offset by the tariff, it's still going to be economic, in the economic interests of these companies to go to other countries. And personally, you know, from a national security perspective, I think that that's a horrible, that's incredibly dangerous, you know, and I would like for them to try to reduce the reliance on other countries for critical inputs. But yeah, like a tariff, you know, if you assume the dollar, say 50%, 60%, even 70% overvalued, a 10, 15, 20% tariff, it still doesn't make economic sense to produce these, to try to produce these things in America. So, I think the dollar is really the one to watch for all that.
I do think you're right though, to another thing you said, you know, both you and Wade, it's like, if markets, like if Trump is kind of all over the place, like markets like certainty, right? And one thing we're seeing is uncertainty. I think Bitcoin performs well under any condition, but I think it really performs well with all the uncertainty out there. Did want to welcome to the stage Neil and Texas Toast as well. And you guys have any thoughts this morning? We can kind of take this conversation wherever we want to this morning. It's kind of a manic Monday, or a macro Monday. And, just want to say good morning to you guys. And, whether it pertains to this subject or others, wanted to, welcome you to the stage. So, Neil, Texas Toast, how you guys doing?
I'm doing real well. I can just say my brief little thought from everything that has been, I've heard thus far, but, yeah. So anyways, just listening to everything you guys have been saying, you know, my mission is always here to tie this, like the monetary happenings of the day, kind of back to orange pilling the normies. And like the thing that just pops out to me is like, we have all the personnel shakeups at the Fed and all the tariff drama. And these are all just decisions being made by people. And at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter who's at the helm of the ship. This problem isn't management. Like the root core of this problem is, you know, systemic. And that's why Bitcoin performs as it does in all the different, you know, it doesn't matter, rates are high, rates are low, like Bitcoin's gonna perform. So I don't know, that's just my two sats.
Yeah, and I agree, and I'm kinda in the position of they have no choice. They have no other options. This is the only route they can go. I don't know, like Robert, do you see another route that they can go with all this? They're going to have to devalue the dollar. That looks like they're going to try to maybe get rid of the Fed and push stable coins and do all this kind of, you know, you can tell their backs are against a wall And it seems like this is kind of the only path forward. I don't really see another path outside of stable coins and to lowering rates and devaluing the dollar. And then you don't have a buyer for your treasuries because the rates are so low. So you force them to buy them through stable coins. And then it, and Bitcoin, how does Bitcoin fit into that picture for you?
Yeah, so I would say that that they do have a choice. It just comes down to trade-offs. So if your goal with the debt is to address the fiscal health and the debt picture, the way you do that is by running nominal growth higher than the interest rate on your debt. Now the issue is that the bond market just lived through the worst kind of surprise inflation. Printing 40% of the money is not a surprise, but it surprised the bond market for whatever reason, surprised them. And they don't want to live through another bout of surprise inflation. So they're going to be kind of extra sensitive to being, repressed. And so I think that, if your goal is to get nominal growth above the cost of the debt, remember that the whole point of a 10-year bond yield is to approximate nominal growth expectations, right? So if they are going to try to do the, we're going to grow our way out of the debt, well, bond yields are going to go higher, right? If nominal growth is going higher, bond yields are going to go higher. So you eventually get into a direct confrontation with the bond market. It is a, one party is trying to have rates lower than they naturally should be, and the other is trying to have rates maybe slightly higher than they should be. So, like the incentives of the bond market and then the incentives of the admin are in direct conflict with each other. And the only way that you really address that is by, QE, yield curve control, some intervention to prevent the bond market from behaving as it naturally would and forcing rates to be lower. And yeah, the 51 Fed Accord, the funny thing about that is that it was to establish Fed independence, right? And now all the talk about a new accord between Fed and Treasury is to basically reverse the 1951 Fed Accord and to resorb, the Fed into the U.S. Treasury. And look, I understand people might support Trump. I understand people might like Trump. I would just say that generally that is a very dangerous road to start going down. I kind of see the point though that I think you're making, which is it's inevitable or it's kind of required, right? They don't have a choice. But I would just say, imagine Kamala Harris or Gavin Newsom setting monetary policy, right? So it's, again, it's just one more indication, one more bullish indicator that should be driving people towards Bitcoin.
Right. And then, but there's two things with that. It's like in a world where, Bitcoin is more firmly established as a, the neutral reserve asset alongside gold. It kind of takes the monetary policy. It makes it, not mean as much. So I think it becomes less scary in that kind of sense. And then politically, you can see how, Trump really takes a, he knows about Andrew Jackson. He's right. He talks about him a lot. I think he kind of sees himself as Jackson-esque. So I think, that's part of his motivation with getting rid of the Fed or talking it down and fighting with them. But yeah, I just see in a world where Bitcoin is what we think it is, the U.S. monetary policy becomes less and less significant.
Yeah, I would say it's still going to probably be, I agree, kind of around the margins for the next, say, decade. You will see an erosion as, the reliance on kind of the dollar system and kind of the fiat system as that is eroded. And it's already started, right? We know that if you take foreign held debt as a share of total U.S. government debt, that peaked in 2013. We know that a dollar share of FX reserves peaked over 10 years ago, right? So a lot of these things, everyone knows about the gold purchases by central banks over the past couple of years. like a lot of these things are already in motion. They're just kind of gradual. It's not, in my opinion, it's not like a sudden, you know, Omega candle or this crazy cataclysmic event. It is just kind of gradually, slowly around the margins. You see, you know, a move away from the dollar, a move away from kind of the legacy system and into, you know, I mean, in a fourth turning, what do you want? You want scarce, bearer assets. And so I think that, you know, that recognition is being made by the globe, right? By individuals, by corporations and by sovereigns. And I think that, yeah, like around the margins, it'll continue for a while, but it's not going to be this dramatic overnight thing.
I agree, but you know, there is a chance. That's why I like holding Bitcoin even more. It's like, I'm not expecting this, you know, God candle, you know, really bad scenario, but there's a chance that could happen.
Yeah, of course. I feel like, of course,
as the world gets more and more unstable, it's like those chances go up. I still don't think that'll be the case, but, you know, I think a lot of people get caught up just completely disregarding it. And I think that's part of the reason why you hold it is for that scenario.
Yeah. No, it's definitely a chance. You know, I would say maybe, I don't know, if I had to put a number on it, probably 5 to 15% chance. But yeah, like to your point, even in that sort of black swan sort of event, you know, I just, the only situation that I see Bitcoin not performing positively is either kind of a correlation to one sort of event, because it behaves as a, you know, high beta NASDAQ, regardless whether we like that or not, you know. So when you see, you know, kind of a correlation to one, VAR shock in the kind of TradFi markets, you get a pullback in Bitcoin. It's just kind of how it is. But like, you know, on a longer term time frame, I think that, you know, black swans, really the black swan that would be catastrophically bad for Bitcoin is a deflationary shock, significant deflationary shock. And I just don't see that being possible in a highly levered debt-based system.
Yeah, it gets me thinking about, you know, you're talking about bearer assets, gets me thinking about how, you know, there is this push, if you read the administration and some of these regulators, and then also what BlackRock has been saying, you know, they're trying to create systems to tokenize real world assets and put them, you know, in a place where people can just move them around. And I think that that's maybe it's joining the party, but it's also potentially at times as adoption occurs, something that could slow down Bitcoin. Cause I think people, like normal people, just get confused between what's what, right? Like they don't understand the true digital scarcity of Bitcoin. Like what was the real, invention here? What was the real discovery? It was true, verifiable digital scarcity. And so, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this stuff plays out. Does anybody else on the stage have any other questions? And also, while we get there, maybe there is the opportunity to come up on stage, guys. I didn't say it this morning because I was just so enthralled by that opening music. But if you want to come up on stage, hit that little microphone button in the bottom left and leave your comments in the comment section, that little purple pill. So far, I'm the only one. We should have a contest. Who can leave the most comments? But yeah, any other questions for Robert, or where do we want to take this, guys? We can kind of jump around, like I said before, cover some topics, maybe some related topics. But yeah, any other things that were crossing your mind as Wade and Robert were going back and forth, Texas? Yeah. And it could be crickets. That's fine. But yeah, what do you guys think? I know it's fun on a Monday, like
Bob, I'll say this,
a moment of silence for Elon. So there you had it.
I'll say this about real world assets, right? Like you're still trusting. I don't get the hype around all that RWA stuff. Like, you know, whether say it's gold, like you're still trusting the custodian, right? Like there's still counterparty risk. So personally, I would not, you know, I'm not going to be head over heels for that RWA thing. You know, it might be on a blockchain, right? And you might have this kind of common thread, which is the blockchain, but really it's quite different from Bitcoin.
You're going to put it on chain, dog. Oh yeah. With gold, it's like nothing has changed. If you put it on the chain, nothing changes with its value proposition and what it is and why it failed as money in the first place. It's like, you know, with some things like real estate and some of these other assets, I can kind of see it maybe a use case, in a world without Bitcoin, but we have Bitcoin. So, screw all that.
I would also say, Bob, I was going to say pivot if anyone is interested is that, Tucker Carlson interview, that he did with Richard Warner, who ironically was kind of the economist that, got me thinking in the kind of, silent depression, sort of framework that I've been working on. Reading Richard Warner's papers, and listening to his speeches at various academic institutions. So, his interview with Tucker, if anyone watched that, I thought it was pretty interesting. Maybe it's a potential pivot if anyone watched that.
Yeah, I did listen to it on one of my morning walks that I do. And I didn't listen to the entire thing. I probably got through about 65% of it. But yeah, I would encourage everybody to listen to it. Not sure if anybody else on the stage heard it. I know it was making its rounds around X. I think one of the big takeaways for me is that I've actually heard him speak before, certainly, but Tucker Carlson's audience is gigantic. And so maybe this gets this message out into more ears and more minds. I wonder though, if he has come to the same conclusion about Bitcoin, because it didn't go there necessarily, right? Again, didn't listen to the whole thing, but what do you know what his stance on Bitcoin is, Robert?
I don't know.
Or anyone?
I'm about 85%.
Sorry, from what Simon Dixon, he's had interaction with him before, before Bitcoin existed. They were having some interactions in the monetary reform community, and he touched on it in his last show. He basically said that, Simon went the way of Bitcoin, Werner went the way of like just doubling down on QE, saying that Bitcoin is a scam and is never going to work. And then there was one other guy that like went total, black pill or dark side and is basically working for the CBDCs of, I think, the Europeans, but I forget. Maybe, Skidoo knows a little more. He's got his hand up. What's up?
No, not more to add to it, but I was going to say I just finished listening to that Tucker Carlson interview yesterday. It was amazing. It was really good. You know, for some of us Bitcoiners to some extent, not totally new info, but there was new info and it was deep and it was broad. It was great. Highly recommend it. I left it just being like, if I had this guy's phone number, I'd call him right now because I want to ask him his perspective. I assume he understands some things about Bitcoin. I wanted to understand his perspective on what distortions and what games can these same powers that from his interview with Tucker shows how deep and long range they can go with a plan to take down the Japanese economy and all these things. What could they potentially do to try to manipulate Bitcoin into destabilizing it or not allowing price rises or whatever? Just wondered what his perspective was.
Yeah, it is interesting. I wanted to go to Neil. I see his hand up. Go ahead, sir.
Just to answer the Werner question on what the solution. So I heard him talking about, like, I would say he believes in decentralization, but he wants to decentralize the banks. So he said that it's what actually creates real growth and makes the healthy economy is all the, like, small, small banks giving small business loans out. He's like, I think that's like the simplest way of putting what he thinks the solution is like decentralizing the banking industry itself, not reforming it, just smashing the central and pushing it local, to small banks, small business loans, not big banks buying assets and, creating money that way. So he's definitely in the he doesn't think fiat's bad. It's just kind of, the application of the big centralized organ is, I think that's the best way to describe what he would say his solution is.
Yeah. And the central bank has grown bigger as well, right? If you look at M2 divided by M0, everything changed in with the GFC. If you look at consumer-based loans relative to, say, business investment, business and industrial investment also peaked in the mid to late 90s, right? So you go down the list and you compare, you see, because I've been doing this for the past 5 days or whatever, every morning for a couple hours. Something changed in the 90s to kind of early 2000s during that time period where the central bank grew even larger, right? We know the Fed's balance sheet went from like 8% of GDP all the way up to 24% of GDP. We know that M0 started to play a much larger role in kind of the money creation game, as he, you know, accurately talks about. And so, yeah, like something clearly changed. We know M2, the velocity of money fell off a cliff in the late 90s. I think a lot of it was kind of the hyper-financialization of the economy via, you know, this globalist sort of experiment that we went down. And you know, a lot of those, if you look at the trade deficit relative to some of these metrics, you can see that money velocity starts to fall as the trade deficit is growing wider. Again, going back to that capital account surplus story, that's hyper-financialization kind of right there. That's the root of it, is turning your economy, you know, dollar Dutch disease, as Luke Grumman says, turning your economy into away from a net productive, one that provides real goods and services into one that just is a bunch of, you know, hedge funds and, you know, Jane Street algorithm building mathematicians, right? For some hedge fund, you know, that is what we've turned our economy into. It's directly correlated to the money velocity. By the way, and a lot of these things all kind of peaked in the mid to late 90s, you know, depending, different ones peaked at slightly different times, but it was kind of in that general time frame that everything really changed in a structural way in the economy. And it is the direct result of growing centralization, of growing size, growing control, and growing, you know, unproductiveness of lending, because you can see it very clearly and say consumer loans divided by, you know, M0, for example, or M2, you know, the share of consumer based facing loans or the share of business facing loans as a share of the overall money supply, it peaked, right? And we know velocity fell. We know the economy became hyper financialized. So it's all kind of, I'm trying to all tie it together for a video, but it's kind of there's a number of different interrelated concepts that I think are all linked. It's just kind of difficult to draw that link.
Yeah, it was really interesting to hear him talk about, you know, QE, because he invented the term QE, and he basically, you know, put it at it as it would be productive if QE was used for small business loans, and it's unproductive and detrimental and will lead to disaster if it inflates and goes directly into assets and kind of monetizes everything. So they kind of like took his model and used it the exact wrong way. He said like not to use it. And so now it's, he's just kind of like, what are you guys doing? I said, do it the right way. And you guys bastardized my invention.
Yeah. QE gets a bad rap, but really, you know, I read some of his work on QE when he was proposing it for Japan. Really, the way he proposed it makes perfect sense. I mean, it, you know, it is it this kind of, you know, ANCAP utopia? No, It's not, right? Like it has ties to this, you know, kind of old regime. But like, if you're going to be in the old regime, his method of QE is actually quite smart. The problem, like you said, is that they totally bastardized his concept of QE and just took it in this bizarre direction.
Yeah, his really good interview. I think, man, there's just so many topics that you could talk about related to this. And I don't want to, you know, go away from this too far, but kind of hopping back to what we were talking about a little bit earlier, I wonder, like, the people on stage, does it stand to reason you guys think that sanctioned countries are secretly mining Bitcoin? And the reason I ask it is because, you know, we were talking about tokenization and maybe being a distraction to Bitcoin, but don't you think that it's very likely that these countries are trying to get their hands on as much Bitcoin as possible and doing it in a sovereign way where it really can't be stopped? Anybody can jump in on that or hop back to the previous topic, but yeah, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, what do you guys think? I mean, we know for a fact Russia's doing it, you know, to what extent and everything. It's like hard to know because they're sanctioned and they're kind of behind these regimes that we don't have a huge look inside, whether it be Iran or Russia or China. It's like, you know, we know that Russia's doing it because they're starting to settle some trade in Bitcoin. So it's like, where are they getting the Bitcoin? You know, I would assume it's through mining. And we know they're like Soviet era infrastructure, you know, has an abundance of power generation in that country. So, you know, base assumption is absolutely yes. Especially if you're sanctioned and you want a way to get around some of this stuff and monetize, that's the way to do it.
Go ahead, BFP.
Yeah, I'd have to say that most are not, in my opinion. And that's just because the people in government, they crave control at all levels. And that's pretty much worldwide, any country that they want control of their citizens, and Bitcoin does not offer them control. So if they get, like, you know, in bed with Bitcoin, it's almost like freedom to the people. And like Trump, he kind of did the whole co-opting thing inadvertently, but, you know, we don't know what he thinks and we just see what he does. So his actions speak louder than his words, because we all know, you know, he's definitely the best president out of the two we had a choice in, but these are all people in government. It's not like the people of China, you know, are getting to vote to whether to mine Bitcoin and all that. It's all these small groups of people that control. So I don't think they're going to adopt Bitcoin. I think it's going to come from the people that are, you know, on the streets, the plebs are going to adopt it, and it's going to be a grassroots movement.
I think there's a big difference though between sovereigns adopting Bitcoin and individuals. I'd like to think you're right that people will see it as freedom money, but you know, the biggest thing that these nation states control is the narrative inside their countries, right? And then everything that goes to fit that narrative. So I just think,
but they're losing it.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. Cause you have the internet, right?
Which yes, exactly. Information.
But I think that it's just in my mind, like if I'm a Bitcoin solves problems. And so I think that these nation states, they have a big problem if they're either trying to get away from the dollar system or they're not allowed into it. They're going to find other ways. So a lot of countries, you know, are able to get around it because they have natural resources, energy, those types of things. And so it only stand a reason for me that they would use that energy to mine Bitcoin.
Well, I think that's what happened in El Salvador. So you saw an example of just what you said there. So there's a good, you know, but it was a person who thought, hey, I don't want to get the base. I don't want my people to get the base. And he seems like a based guy, even though he's like a dictator. And So we'll see how that plays out in the long run.
Yeah, I mean, one topic that we touched on maybe a few weeks ago when it came out was just like another example, Pakistan, right? They are now allowing banks to buy and sell Bitcoin. But you have what you said, BFP, an example with Algeria, who announced, I think it was last week, that they banned everything to do with Bitcoin. So all wallets are illegal overnight. No mining is allowed. And so it's interesting to see the, you know, just these nation states, like what's coming out of them related to Bitcoin. And I think you can make arguments on both sides. Again, I'd love to see it come from the bottom up like it has, from the people adopting it, and governments have no choice. But I think we'll see a mix dependent upon the countries that are either taking drastic measures. What came out of China, guys? I was kind of unplugged over the weekend for the most part. What came out of China? Did they say they banned Bitcoin again, or what did you guys see there? I didn't really pay attention. It's kind of only like the drippings of it for me.
I don't know exactly. I think I heard they banned it for the 100th time or something, but nothing really major.
Yeah, so big nothing burger. but again, the point I'm trying to make is that I think you'll see where it solves a problem and people identify, one, the problem, but then two, that Bitcoin is the best solution, you're going to see it used. Money is a tool and adoption is inevitable. Got a new speaker request. Let's see if if you guys want to talk amongst yourselves while I try to get him up here.
I had something to say about there's a Adam Curry and Dvorak on No Agenda were talking about mackerels in the Texas prison and how that's their currency. So I think we're going to see, you know, humans make currencies what they are by what they value the most. And I think as the slow drip of time keeps winding on, people are just going to figure it out. I mean, people aren't stupid. I know there's a lot of stupid people out there, but in general, people are smart and they're going to figure out, why would I keep my money in this leaky bucket when I have this ridiculously sturdy bucket that holds water like nothing else? They're going to adapt.
What's weird is normally the Chinese seem like they make sense, and they make sense in almost everything that they say, except their gold disclosures and their Bitcoin policy and disclosures. And that doesn't make a lot of sense, considering their nearest, dearest ally right now, you know, the Russians and Cyberbank, are doing Bitcoin-related, Bitcoin-adjacent activity. And so that, the Chinese statements, they're nonsensical. They don't match up with the economic and financial policy of their allies.
Yeah, but the China thing's FUD, guys. Just look it up. It didn't happen. I just wanted to jump up and say that. Just throw it into Grok or whatever. That was FUD being thrown around.
So where did that originate? And thanks for that. Do appreciate it. It's funny, like, what you pick up when you're only halfway paying attention. So,
yeah, okay. It was one of those Bitcoin or crypto accounts that just throws stuff up for engagement and it spread. If you look at the replies, Grok is all over them inside the replies saying it's FUD.
Dig deeper. Yeah, thank you. Hope, thanks for coming up, if that's how you say your name.
Yep.
Welcome to the stage. Did you have anything in particular you wanted to talk about, or just coming up to say hi?
No, I just came up to throw that one up in the air for you guys. I'm enjoying listening to you. So that was it. Appreciate it.
Perfect. Yeah. So guys, we maybe have about 5 minutes left in the show. Did want to make sure we gave everybody a chance to give some parting thoughts. Do want to thank Robert again for coming on and giving us some of these things to think about, macro updates. There's a lot going on. Please check out Infernomics on YouTube. He puts out great videos. And Robert, did you want to say anything about when your, was it an interview with Marty, or what were you doing on Friday, if you don't mind me asking, and when might something come out of that?
Yeah, actually, I think it's today, and appreciate the kind words. Yeah, Marty, Bent, or the TFTC, I think that comes out today. And then also I was talking with, Roberto Rios, who runs the Peruvian Bull account. He's another great macro, follow for the Bitcoin world. So if you don't follow him, go check him out, and, conversation with him should be coming out, any day now as well.
Yeah, good stuff. While we're gathering our thoughts for maybe final wrap up here, I did want to make an announcement that Bitcoin Veterans is having its second summit, 2025. It's going to be November 10th and 11th, right around Veterans Day in Nashville, Tennessee. And excited to do that, to a two-day event. So it'll be Monday the 10th and then Veterans Day the 11th. And the main conference, it looks like, is going to be on the 10th, but then there's going to be a range day and some other stuff, other things. So if you guys are interested in that, you don't have to be like an expert marksman to participate in range day. So don't be afraid. There'll be gear provided, so you don't have to bring your entire arsenal and all that ammo on the plane if you're flying in. But it should be a good event. I know a lot of people enjoyed it last year, but just kind of one part of it is we don't need just attendees. Love to get people involved. So right now, looking for speakers, workshop leads, sponsors, volunteers, all that stuff. So if you're interested in that, either finding out information about the being an attendee, or you want to get involved, check out bitcoinveterans.org/summit2025. We'll be trying to talk about that and remind the audience each day. We do this every weekday, 10 a.m. Eastern. Please follow me or anybody up here on stage, and we will, you'll see us every morning doing this. So, that's my announcement for this morning, but wanted to go around the horn and see if people had, any final thoughts or parting words for this Monday as we send people off to go stack more sats.
I had a quick thing to say about media in general. Every time they mention like that China thing or anything really, Pakistan, you know, our media is controlled. Operation Mockingbird, I think something recently came out and told us about that, but it's not only is our media controlled, but the other governments are controlling their media even more than ours. So what we get fed through the main sources of media, you always have to think, why are they telling us this? And that's the main thing, is just you have to take a defensive position. I'm not saying it's not true, but they usually do the half truths and they feed you something to make you chew on it while something else is going on in the corner. So just keep, you know, listening to spaces like these and talking to people and reading books and, you know, control your information diet, because I learned through, it was COVID that really turned me, because I was a nincompoop or not really very bright when it came to just listening and not thinking. So critical thinking. Thanks for having me, Bob.
100% agree. And Tucker Carlson's dad was in charge of a lot of that propaganda for his whole life. So just a thing to think about when you see Tucker Carlson have people on. It's like, why now? Why is this coming out? Who's he interviewing? Why haven't they been talking about this for so long? Because that guy's been around for a long time. But now's the time it's going to go. His message is going mainstream. Why? So other than that, have a wonderful Monday.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I agree with that, Texas. And I think of those things often. And it's partly why, you know, you have to be selective as to what you listen to. Like I subscribe or not subscribe. I guess I follow Tucker Carlson, but I rarely listen to an episode. One, they're too long, and two, there's just more exciting things usually to consume. And then three, I think there's people who do a really good job of dissecting those things and pulling out the key points and posting them in a variety of places. So you can get those nuggets without having to listen to the whole thing. So just depends on how you consume and who you're trying to get it from. But I totally agree. There's a lot of filtering that needs to be done by everybody. And I love your point, BFP. I think most of the people in this space do, you know, use their noggins and critical thinking. And so that's what I appreciate the most about Bitcoin and Bitcoiners. We're always challenging ourselves to learn more, to gain perspective, to hopefully listen to new voices and not always just be in these, you know, what people just kicking around the same thing. We try to keep it interesting, light, and fun on this. It's always great, though, to have people who can talk about the macro trends like Robert. And we don't do that every day, but it's fun to talk about philosophy, too, like we did last week with Neil. And, you know, we'll get to hear some other cool things on Thursday about Bitcoin Park and what they're doing. And then I will keep telling you every day to check out Bitcoin Veterans Summit and maybe come as an attendee or help out, help get on the mission, help other people get on the mission. So any final words, Wade, Neil, or Pope? And again, Pope, thanks for coming up for the first time. And 23 Skidoo, I see you there as well. So anybody who wants to jump in, let's wrap it up here in the next 5 minutes.
Yeah, I'll just say, don't trust, verify. When USA Today comes out and says that XRP is the best $500 investment, you know you can't trust the news you're reading.
Yeah, I wonder who paid them to say that. Go ahead, Wade.
Yeah, guys, just be your own security manager, self-custody.
Yeah, I'll jump in, say goodbye, say thank you, Bob. Yeah. And for whatever it's worth, I just bought a Start 9 setup yesterday, and I'm really psyched to go down that rabbit hole and start running the node.
Yeah, good stuff. They do make it pretty easy. Take some time to download the blockchain, but it's all good. Neil, maybe your hand is showing up and you don't mean it to, but final words from you, sir?
Yeah, I just had one little thing to say on the nation state versus pleb adoption. So it's like, I mean, if you go down and buy the game theory and think that Bitcoin is like some Nash equilibrium, like I do, but then that means that stacking sats, that's the optimal strategy for all players, irrespective of who. So I'm not really worried about who's stacking or what size or whether it's a nation state or just some little guy. Like anyone stacking stats is good. If you kind of go down, that's my take on the nation versus pleb thing.
Good stuff. Do want to give Robert one last stab at final words. And once again, sir, thanks for coming up and sharing your stuff with us today.
Yeah, appreciate it. I would just say also to the point about the media, you're going to hear that stuff here first, like 9 months before you hear, you know, even someone like Tucker Carlson, but especially the mainstream media, you're going to hear it, you know, in rooms like this. And so, yeah, I would say that there's a, you know, a arbitrage, an information arbitrage, and some degree of asymmetry for the pleb, because you will hear certain themes here first, not just this room, but places like this before they ever make it to Tucker, let alone before they ever make it to, you know, the mainstream.
Yeah, you do find that. I think the good, maybe another good takeaway too, is that the people around you that don't come in these spaces, they don't understand this stuff. Like they really are looking at that US Today article and thinking, oh man, I need to act on this. It's strange how some people trust certain media outlets. Like if it's in there, it must be true. So yeah, continue to be vigilant, but don't be surprised when the Normieville people around you in your life come to you with these crazy ideas that they're pushing out in the propaganda outlets, or I'm sorry, mainstream media outlets. thanks guys, for coming up. We're going to wrap the show here. I do want to thank everybody who joined us today, everyone who had us on in the background, all the speakers for the lively discussion. Please do follow everybody that's up here. And whether you're a veteran or not, if you do need help running a node or any other thing on your Bitcoin journey, please do visit bitcoinveterans.org. Throw your information in the, I guess it's a form, and we'll get you plugged into valuable resources on your Bitcoin journey. But that's all we have for today, guys. We'll do it again tomorrow. Please join us 10 a.m. Eastern. Want to wish you guys a wonderful Monday. And remember, don't shitcoin. I'll bring back an old favorite and say it's like taking cough medicine to cure your hemorrhoids.
People that use fiat currency as a store of value, we call them poor. We call them poor.